Monster Man, Episode 199, Fly, Comma Giant, and Foo Creatures. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're taking a look at two more monsters from the F chapter of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. Before I do that, though, I want to respond to some listener mail and thank a new Patreon supporter. That's right, this is someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman and pledged as little as $1 a month to support the show. And if, like today's patron, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, in which I am reading my way through the Deities and Demigods supplement. I'm talking about using the gods, monsters, and mythological beings that I find in it, and religion and mythology more generally, in your campaigns. So thank you very much, Paul Lalong. I really appreciate your support. I raised a couple of questions in past episodes, and listeners have responded. I wondered whether brandy was available in the Dungeon Master's Guide or in the Player's Handbook equipment list, which I did not have to hand. And Steve Dempsey pointed out that brandy specifically isn't, but alcohol is. Presumably here we're referring to, like, distilled alcohol. And I asked about whether the phrase Valley Girl was in common usage in 1983, and apparently it was. In fact, Evan Hughes informs me that there was a song parody published in Dragon Magazine just a few months after Monster Manual 2 came out, in which the Valley Elf is substituted for the Valley Girl in the Moon Zappa song Valley Girl, the Frank Zappa stroke Moon Zappa song Valley Girl. Anyway, thank you so much, both of you. And also, listener Bilbo Baggins, which I suspect to be a pseudonym, brought to my attention that the download links on the Patreon feed were not working for a while. That seems to be something that Patreon changed and which they have now changed back. So if you were having trouble downloading links directly from the Patreon feed, that should now all be okay. All right, on to the monsters. First up, we have the Fly, Comma Giant. They're huge, they're gross, they signify rot, decay, and death. And we've got two kinds, just as there are many kinds of fly in real life, we've got two kinds here in Monster Manual 2. We've got the giant blue bottle and the giant horsefly. Blue bottles are pretty much harmless. They might attack you if you're wounded or, like, you know, because they just sort of, like, you, if you're covered in blood, they think of you as being covered in food. They might attack you if, for some reason, you are carrying around a big pile of sugar, I guess. And then you got the more aggressive horsefly, which can sting you, again, just like a real horsefly can, and sort of suck out your blood. Like all other animal monsters, these have an immediate relatable hook, which is really nice. Also, I should say that little collections of plastic bugs are usually pretty straightforward to find in, like, toy shops or pound stores. They're the common, like, in Halloween shops, you know, those, like, Halloween costume places that spring up every Halloween and then vanish as quickly afterward. So I feel like miniatures of giant flies are probably really easy to make by using things that are about the same size as real flies or a little bit larger. Now, if it weren't for the fact that this is from the early 80s, I would say that that's probably the origin of the giant fly as a monster. And again, this is another thing where I'm kind of astonished that this wasn't in an earlier book. Maybe it was, and these are just sort of new varieties for it. Nearly 200 episodes in, I'm sort of losing track of what has and hasn't been in the previous books, as you can maybe tell from the last few episodes. Anyway, the giant fly is pretty great. Like all good giant animal monsters, it works well because we have an instinctive response to the animal that this is a giant version of. You know, we all think that flies are kind of gross, and we all have an understanding of the sort of symbolic meaning of a fly. Now, that is probably less true for the next creatures on our list, foo creatures, but there's an interesting story behind these beings. Foo creatures come in two categories. You got dogs and lions. Both of them are spiritual beings that will show up to fight off evil creatures, particularly devils. So, in that sense, they have a tenuous link to the creatures from Chinese art that they are inspired by, because the foo creatures are sort of based on the stone lions that you get in Chinese architecture. It was traditional for buildings such as temples to have these guardian statues outside them, and they are usually in the form of a pair of lions, one male and one female. And, you know, they act as sort of spiritual protectors. Their goal is to protect the building from harmful spiritual influences or even harmful people. And somehow these stone lions, and they're called stone lions in Chinese, somehow these stone lions came to be referred to in English as foo dogs, and no one is really sure why. There are a number of proposed explanations, but, like, they're not dogs. They're lions, and maybe the idea, I mean, they're highly kind of abstract, stylized lions. I mean, they don't look very much like lions, you know? They're very fantastical looking. So maybe observers were confused about what kind of animal they were supposed to be, and I guess there are some Chinese dog breeds that are known as lion dogs because they have kind of like that mane and the snout. But then it seems like maybe someone knew this who was working on Monster Manual 2, right? So when, like, so by the time Monster Manual 2 came around, the term foo dog to describe the guardian statues that stand outside, you know, traditional Chinese temples was very widespread. But at the same time, someone knew that they weren't really dogs, they were lions. And so therefore, the foo creatures divide into dogs and lions because they felt like they had to put the dogs in because it was what people expected, but they also wanted to include the lions because that's what they're actually supposed to be. And I still don't know why they're called foo. Again, like I said, I've read multiple different explanations for this. So I don't quite know how to interpret this. Like, it, on the one hand, it represents a, you know, a characteristic incuriousness about what other cultures think their own cultures mean, if that makes sense. But on the other hand, at least it does seem to represent some recognition that the widespread view of these things is incorrect, and an attempt, even if, you know, somewhat ham-fisted, to correct it. So, you know, one out of two, maybe. Anyway, the description of the foo creatures is a little bit weird to me because it lays emphasis on the fact that they, you know, they might show up to help, but they don't really stick around, which seems odd to me for creatures that are based on statues. I mean, if there's one thing that statues are known for, it's sticking around. But I guess the argument here is that you don't want the PCs to have persistent long-term supernatural allies. And this is the problem that we've faced before with many other good supernatural creatures, like the Kirin. All of those things have a tendency to be like, well, again, why wouldn't it just stick around and help you out? Particularly in kind of the developing mid-80s culture of D&D, where rather than just being some rogues in a hole in the ground, we're starting to get the sense that we're very important people on a very important quest. Bit of a tricky one, because you don't want the players to either be, you know, very, very powerful because they suddenly have these supernatural allies. You don't want them to feel overshadowed by their supernatural allies. So something where it's built in that, like, yeah, it shows up, it fights a devil, and then it moves on, you know, like a gunslinger in a Western. That's fine, I guess. Prevents the game from being irrevocably altered by the presence of a powerful supernatural ally. I do like the idea that they are stronger against evil creatures, particularly devils, which sort of tells you through the mechanics a little bit something about who they are and what they do. So I think they're all right, stipulating that they're couched in this slightly sloppy description of the stone lions as quote-unquote foo dogs, whatever that might mean. Okay. So that's about all the time that we have for today. Our next episode is going to be a special episode brought to you by the generosity of my Patreon supporters. And the episode after that is going to be regular episode number 200. And we're going to take a break from our journey through Monster Manual 2. I'm going to thank all of my supporters. I'm going to talk about the future of Monster Man. And I'm going to do a special monster from a source that I don't normally discuss. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.